Joseph, come on! It is gone! No, he missed it.
Good.
Are you kidding me? He missed it right.
He missed it right.
Oh,
are
my
you
heavens.
Kidding me? Oh my. This.
He missed it right.
I wish this was the first time that we saw this happen. Oh my heavens.
Hard dropping back 5 yards. Pressure coming. Gets rid of it deep. And Ruggs flies underneath and makes the catch at the 10, and he's into the end zone for a touchdown.
Beats Flowers across the 45, gets to the outside at the 50, the 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Derrick Henry. What a run.
Jackson sets in the shotgun, takes the snap, runs to the left. He's got a gap. He's got a first down. And with
that's
1 minute
how you
left
win
to
a
play,
game.
The Hayes in the barn
that's
for the
how
first
you win a
time
game.
In 2021.
TSN 1200.
So would we say that those Vikings announcer, the play-by-play guy who said the field goal, game-winning field goal kick was good when it wasn't, is that premature speculation that he was involved in right there? I believe.
Full-on fandom? Yeah. It is a bit of a weird angle, at least when I saw JR. I wasn't real sure whether or not he made it or not, but yeah, that's...
You could probably wait for the official underneath the post. I mean, it was close, but it wasn't that close.
No,
he missed
point.
It by a foot.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you're a Viking fan, you're used to your kickers making missing important kicks. So it's just another example on what's going on in a crazy NFL Sunday, which included a bunch of quarterback injuries, some upsets, a terrific Sunday night game to wrap it up. Looked like it was going to be a blowout based on the first minute when Lamar threw a pick six, but to his credit and their credit, the Ravens rallied back to beat the Chiefs. And here we are. We got one game to go, 2-0-1 teams tonight, Detroit and Green Bay. 2 weeks into the season, 32 teams, only seven teams are 2-0. To show you the parody that is alive and well in the National Football League. All right, to talk more about it, we welcome to the show, as we do each and every Monday morning. Here is Duke Ellingson, our football analyst. How are you doing this morning, Duke?
Good morning, gentlemen. Beautiful Monday and lots of interesting NFL results yesterday.
Yeah, how's your pool? How are your various pools?
I'm only in one. It's one of the confidence pools where you pick the point value for each win.
I like those.
They're really a lot of fun. I was relatively horrific last week and much better, but I think yesterday really there wasn't a lot of head scratching upsets, so I think most people in the pools would have done reasonably well picking winners straight up anyways.
Yep. All right, so let's start with the Sunday night game, which didn't start very well for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, and they were down, and then they came back, and they were ahead, and then it looked like they were going to lose in the last 2 minutes, and then the Chiefs fumbled, and then they went for it on 4th-and-1, and there's just so many great stories from that game. But I want to start with John Harbaugh's decision to go for it on 4th-and-1 with about a minute 20 or whatever it was to go. So if they make it, they can run out the clock, they win the game. If they don't make it, the Chiefs take over at midfield, and he's going to lose it. So, I mean, did you think in that moment in time that was the right decision? And what do you think about an NFL coach making that decision in that place?
You know what? I mean, I think it absolutely was. You have to take into consideration who you're playing against, who the other quarterback is, and what he's done historically in those positions or situations. And I think there are a couple of guys. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and Patrick Mahomes probably are the three that come to mind first for me, where when you think they don't have enough time and there's too many yards and you don't have any timeouts, there's no way they're going to find a way down the field, and they always seem to do it in those situations. So given Baltimore's ability to run the ball, I mean, Harbaugh coming out on the field, he knew full well what Lamar, if he was really asking him, he knew what the answer was going to be. There's no way in the world Lamar Jackson was going to say, let's punt it. So I think it was the right call in the situation. It had to be done. I don't think anybody really would have even blamed him if it hadn't worked, but they made it work, and you got to give that team so much credit. I mean, they played a tough Monday night game the week before. All those injuries coming back home to play a real quality team, and I mean, defensively, they weren't very good. But Mahomes makes a lot of defense look ordinary. But for them to get that win out, especially getting down like they were in the second half, was really, really impressive.
Last couple of years, I guess, because the heights were so high for Lamar Jackson, Duke, is this almost a bit of redemption to beat Mahomes, to be given the confidence to go for it on fourth down late in the game?
Yeah, I mean, this has been his team for the last number of years. And let's not forget, this guy was a league MVP a couple of years ago. And yes, he hasn't won in big spots, but lots of young quarterbacks go through those growing pains. And, not beating Kansas City, not beating Patrick Mahomes is not exactly a lot of shame in that, right? So I think it was just a sense of, we have the ability with our quarterback to make people miss, and we can, you know, we can get a formation that's going to work for us. And it's only a yard in the NFL. You can, you know, I know it's not always a given, but just given the quality of that quarterback and his ability to run, I think it was a no-brainer.
Are you convinced, Duke, that in this case, obviously, the Ravens, can you win a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson as your quarterback?
Well, you can't win a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson if your defense is playing like they played the last 2 weeks. And I know they've got their share of injuries, but, I mean, they've given
I'm talking about his specific skill set, though.
You know what? At the end of the day, I would still say it's a challenge, because we know that NFL defenses can find ways. And, you know, Bill Belichick was the king of this and has been for years. And lots of teams can do it. Let's just take away the one thing that he does best. And you can find a way to minimize his ability to run. And he's still – and there's two things. He's not a – we know that. He's not a great passer. And he doesn't have a tremendous amount of weapons around him. So I would say at the end of the day, I would not want to go into a playoff. If I had choices, I wouldn't take Lamar Jackson to be the quarterback to take me all the way.
Yeah, and I think it was the Chargers, that playoff game, that built that special defense around him. But do you also fault the club for not building the proper group around him or supporting him?
Well, I think they've tried. I mean, they've brought in a number of different, you know, free agents, and they've had, I think, for the most part, a real quality offensive line and some good running backs. But and they've been continuing to, and he's been, you know, I really admire him, because he has really worked at his craft, and I think he is getting significantly better when it comes to accuracy. He's just not a traditional, the way he throws the ball is a bit unorthodox, and I don't think he'll ever get to be a, you know, real prototype thrower. So they've done everything they can, and I think he's just a really good kid, and he's got a great attitude, and they've done whatever they can around him to give them the best chance to win. And let's not forget, I mean, there's a whole lot of teams that would love to have the Baltimore Ravens track record with John Harbaugh over the last dozen years.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Duke Ellington is joining us. We're talking football. Before we get into nuts and bolts on other games, it came out this morning that, and I had not tracked it, somebody from ESPN did, home teams are 15-16 with one game to go tonight at Lambeau Field. So at best, 500 through 2 weeks. We've got full stadiums. We got fans at full throat. We all hear about home field advantage, particularly, and how big it is in football. So what do you think is the reason that so far, at least, we haven't seen any semblance of a home field advantage?
You know what? That's a really good question, and I don't know the answer. I would like to look back so far, and it's only 2 weeks, but I'd like to see, you know, in those home games, who was the opponent? In other words, if you had a very average team, for example, the New York Jets yesterday, yes, they are at home, but they're playing a pretty solid team in New England, and nobody would have expected the Jets to win. So how many of those 32 home games would have pitted a home underdog and a legitimate home underdog to skew those numbers early?
And also say that, do you not feel that this is something that's been trending, in that a lot of the stadiums overall, I don't want to say they're neutral, but they're not necessarily many Seattle's anymore, that a lot of places, like going into an LA, now they get a lot of visiting fans, but you know, maybe the intimidation factor isn't there, not to mention you're not able to throw beer bottles and other things at the players now.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, right? I mean, anybody that watched the Chargers-Dallas game yesterday, for, you know, that's not a home game for LA in any way, shape, or form, in terms of, you know, they're not even in their city that they were traditionally in for all those years. And the Cowboys fans, as we all know, traveled incredibly well. So that was really a home game for Dallas. And so I think it's a good point. It's not like it used to be, maybe with the field, some of the new stadiums, and, you know, all of the boxes and everything that goes along with it. But, and I think teams, and JR, I hate to bring up a sore spot with your Eagles yesterday, but I was just reading about the 49ers, how the last 3 years they've had back-to-back games out east, and they've stayed out there during the week to acclimatize to the time change and really, you know, not have the extra travel, and they've won all six of those games in a back-to-back scenario. So teams have done a really good job of making sure their players get the best opportunity when they travel to make it a little bit easier on their bodies physically as well.
Okay, Duke, seven teams are 2-0. I am going to put the Raiders and Carolina as my two surprises at 2-0. Now, sometimes we have to, as you said, measure the quality of the opponent, right? And, you know, Carolina beat New Orleans yesterday, which thumped Green Bay in week one. So, but the Raiders, to me, I'm just used to them finding ways to blow games. They go into Pittsburgh and beat a Steelers team that beat Buffalo the week before. So what specifically do you make of the Raiders? Are they good?
You know what, if we had had a chance to talk about it, I was going to bring this up, which was, I think, the most impressive win of yesterday was the Raiders' win. And they are a bit of a surprise. You look at that early schedule, I mean, they get Baltimore on Monday night, and it's a tough, tough game. And then they have to travel on one less day rest out east, which is always a graveyard for teams from the West, usually to play that, you know, 10 o'clock body clock, 10 o'clock a.m. body clock time for them. And yet, and they went in there to a real tough place to play, and, you know, they went toe-to-toe with Pittsburgh. It certainly helped that that Watt got knocked out of the game early, certainly. But, no, they've been really, really good on both sides of the ball. And as you say, we're used to them finding ways at the end to really screw things up. And they pretty much did that in Monday night last week and got away with it in the overtime. But, yeah, to me, that was the most impressive win, and they are a very, very surprising 2-0.
Duke, thoughts on Sam Darnold's play and thoughts on Mr. Wilson? I know it's early, but I've always been a Darnold fan, and I just wonder at times, are NFL teams just too quick to move on from young quarterbacks?
Yeah, we talked about him. I think it was either earlier this season or maybe late last year we were talking about that whole premise about, you know, do teams that are just, you know, in a really bad, a real bad place with their organization, and they bring a quarterback in and it's pretty dysfunctional and they have all these expectations, and it just, you know, they end up running the kid out of town. And I mean, Ryan Tannehill is another one that comes to mind. And so you see now that Sam Darnold is, you know, came from a pedigreed program, you know, is obviously a good, solid pro quarterback, and you surround him with a good organization, a guy like Christian McCaffrey in the backfield, and, you know, they're on the right track, and he just looks like a different player. So, you know, the Jets, they are the Jets, and for a reason, and now they're stuck with a new kid who's going to go through a lot of the same growing pains. We'll have to see what happens with Zach Wilson.
Yeah, Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence has struggled in his first two games for Jacksonville, and, you know, there are a lot of people saying, you know, before he was drafted, hey, this is potentially is the best guy to come into the NFL since Peyton Manning, you know, that.
Yeah.
But it goes to show you that you got to be surrounded by some talent, and there are some growing pains. Is there a concern in either of the cases of Jacksonville or in with the Jets of it being too much, too fast, and it overwhelming a guy where it can be a detriment? Or do you think it's, you know, at your best served, take your lumps, kid. Get out there, keep chucking it. We don't care about the interceptions and the losses. Keep learning, keep getting better, and better days are ahead.
Yeah, I mean, two schools of thought, and we've seen both play out. And I know I've mentioned this to you guys before, but Peyton Manning did play as a rookie every single snap of his rookie season, and they were 1-15, and he was, you know, he was awful. And but that's how he learned, and that's how he got better. And I think, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, to me, yes, they've lost two games, and yes, he's struggled a little bit, but I think he's looked much more competent than has Zach Wilson. And I think playing in the New York market doesn't make it any easier for him. And I think yesterday was an example of where you really needed to get him out of the game, you know, after maybe the third interception, because it gets to be a bit embarrassing and kind of a train wreck, and they don't really have a quarterback to put in there. But to let him go out there and keep making those kinds of mistakes, I think doesn't do him any favors. But I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be fine. It's just going to be a long year there because, as you said, they're just not very good.
Not to mention the Patriots have feasted on young quarterbacks. Thoughts on the Browns for two games?
Yeah, I mean, to me, there were three teams yesterday that had lost the week before that we knew were pretty quality teams and expected much better. And Buffalo, Tennessee, and Cleveland were the three that really come to my mind. So, yeah, I mean, they weren't great yesterday, but and they kind of got behind a little bit against an inferior team at home. But found a way to come back. I thought it was good for the team that Baker Mayfield got banged up, came out and went back in and really played lights out after that. So that was a really big win for them after a bit of a shaky start. So I think they're definitely on the right track. And in that division, I mean, you know, they got Pittsburgh lost yesterday, and you know, Baltimore won, so it's going to be a dogfight in the NFC North.
Talking football with Duke Ellington. I don't have the numbers in front of me, Duke. I'm sure they might come out as far as whether, in terms of the number of flags we've seen through 2 weeks. Is it more? Mm-hmm. Is it less? I just know I watched that. I don't know if you watched the Cowboy Charger game yesterday.
Yeah.
That was just and it turned out to be, I was surprised, Hammer looked at, was it 20 in total? Eight to the Cowboys, 12 to the Chargers. Maybe there were a bunch declined. It just felt like a flag fest for the entire game where it just took away completely. And I didn't say it was one-sided. It was just took completely away from the game for me. Do you think or have you heard, is there a mandate to call, are there different things being emphasized this season that we're seeing called a lot right now in the hopes that the players will adjust and it will get better as the season goes on?
Well, yeah, last year we know that there was a de-emphasis on offensive holding at the line of scrimmage. And they really, I mean, the numbers were down significantly last year, which obviously opens up a lot more in the passing game and doesn't take away those big plays. But I know there has been a point of emphasis on this whole taunting rule, and I think it's probably one of the ones you're talking about, JR, that, you know, it's so subjective. And if you think about, I think it was the Tampa guy, Mike Edwards, that the game was out of hand, but he intercepted the pass and ran in backwards.
Yeah.
And got flagged for it, and Lamar Jackson does a somersault and doesn't get flagged. So totally subjective by the referees, which is a big problem. You can't fault the referees when they're calling false starts or they're calling encroachments or they're calling, you know, the ones that are like
black and white
have to call it, right?
Yeah.
But all the other ones that we're talking about and the emphasis on certain areas that, you know, really does detract. And in that game, I think the Chargers, correct me if I'm wrong, had two touchdowns called back.
Yes.
And I think another big play or something that likely would have changed the outcome of that game. So I agree with you 100%. They need to find a way to manage it and send a message to the players without it detracting from the game as it sometimes does.
What do you expect out of the Lions versus Green Bay? Just going to be absolutely easy one for Aaron Rodgers tonight?
Well, I guess I would have put Green Bay in that same category as Buffalo, Tennessee, and Cleveland as a quality team that really looked really bad last week. And I fully expect some anger from the Packers tonight and especially from Aaron Rodgers. So I don't think this one, you guys may want to watch the election returns rather than watching the second half.
All I know based on my two fantasy football teams, one of which has Aaron Rodgers as its quarterback and the other which has Devontae Adams as its receiver, and I'm behind in both. That if I could just get five Rodgers to Adams touchdown passes tonight, JR would be a happy camper. Just five, that's all I'm asking for.
Well, he could match Jameis Winston and Tom Brady from yesterday.
There you go.
Yeah.
But it's got to be to one guy, not to four, three or four different guys.
Can't spread it around. Can't
all good. All right. Appreciate the time as always, Duke. We'll chat next week.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too. There's Duke Ellington, our football analyst, joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. We'll have tonight's Lions-Packers game for you, 7:30 pregame kickoff, about 8:15 or so, and we'll see if I think everybody's thinking it's going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
Probably will be. Hope it's a competitive game.
Yeah, you got the fired-up Lions coach. Also, Jared, because I thought we had this conversation about home games before, I looked up 2019, 52% home wins in 2019. So I guess my point, I thought we had discussed this before, that all the leagues are really trending towards
cookie-cutter stadiums.
Yeah,
right?
Very much so, right? And also, very sincerely, like, the hardcore fan is being squeezed out of the bottom area, right? High price brings families and really nice people.
Corporate people.
Yeah.
Who are half the time in the back drinking their free beer.
Exactly.
Yeah, and not getting totally annihilated and, as you said, throwing stuff at the players, which can be the intimidating part. But, and I understand, listen, the way they're building stadiums now, there's a certain way to build them to get as many people as you can in and deliver all the creature comforts that people are paying that money want and all that. But I think it does, you know, if it used to be in the past at some of the stadiums, right, you'd go in there and it's like you're just on top of the players and you could see how that would be have a bit of a Roman Coliseum feel to it.
Old RFK and I'm sure the old Eagles, you know, those are literally shaking, right? And it just, you're playing on the old turf, and, you know, it's like playing in a parking lot. Just a much different vibe then, for sure.
All right, we'll take a break, come back with much more. We'll talk about the Kachuk situation, of course. It's the number one story here in Ottawa, with camp set to begin in a couple of days. So the very latest on that, and much more as we continue along here. It's a Monday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Welcome back, 9:35. Just going through some of the texts that have come in this morning. Always thank you for your involvement in the show. It's always great. Half an hour or so ago, we gave you the latest code word in our Red Blacks Jersey Monday contest. The word was fumble. Fumble. Common word to the game of football. When you drop the ball on the field, that's known as a fumble. We needed you to send the code word fumble spelled correctly. I get all the, they all get put in their own little silo where we draw one name tomorrow morning. All the misspells end up in my main feed. I was interested in one in particular. All it was the word. That's all we need. The word was bumble. Bumble is not the word. Bumble is the time that a lot of guys and a lot of girls spend on when they're looking for friendship.
It's a dating app, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
it is the
like
female-friendly version of Tinder,
apparently,
from what I hear.
Yeah.
Yes, so that's the one where Bumble is the one where only the females can initiate initial contact. I had to go look it up. I'm a happily married man. I had to look up the specifics.
Yeah, to look it up.
Okay, Tinder versus Bumble. So there you go. So whoever texted us and maybe was on Bumble and was really not focusing too much. Yeah. And so that's why.
Happily married man, you're on Ashley Madison.
I thought it was it Plenty O' Fish? Was that one as well?
Yeah, but the Ashley Madison one that was had the one years ago that had the big.
But that's a high roller. It was
purged, right? Remember, there were thousands of government workers here in Ottawa.
Oh, that's
it
right.
It was the one that had the most.
A lot of names.
They sent out some stats or something and said. Yeah. Ottawa had like the highest number of
America.
Yeah. Okay. let's see. Let's get some texts. Some other texts at 12-1200. Hey JR, can we now start stop talking about the Brady Tkachuk negotiations and just go straight to Simmer's suggestion? I agree. Lock Keith Tkachuk and Eugene Melnyk in a room and see how it turns out. That comes from unsigned.
Yeah, it is interesting because negotiation again. You are middlemen in essence, and. What you go with, and every time you present it, you're going back. And I just think in this case, you have a father and a brother, it would appear, that are more involved. Also to the comments, Chair, that Matthew had made, and you're starting to discuss this. In the captaincy part of it, I really believe the Ottawa Senators are sitting down and saying, listen, let's get together an 8-year deal. We're going to make you the captain, which I don't believe for a minute has any real leverage in the money, but in just part of the sell. You know, it is part of everything. Negotiation is generally selling and talking and keeping it positive, and in this particular case you have some real strong minds, so without knowing the finances, but I do think in that case that that's kind of what was reiterated there is, hey, you know what, we want you long term. It's not the reason you're going to sign long term, it's not the reason we're offering it, but if we can find a contract here, you are going to be the next captain of Ottawa.
Yeah, I just kind of want, if this all ends up, and it's been talked about, right, that if, you know, that Tkachuk desires a long-term contract, he likes Ottawa, the Sens are very interested in signing a long-term contract. But if these lines in the sand have been drawn that neither side at this point appears to want to budge from, and so the only fallback, the only recourse is eventually landing on a bridge contract, a shorter-term contract to kind of push it all down the road, as it were. And then following through on the owner's assertion that the next captain of the Sens will not be somebody who's on a bridge deal if they do decide to you know, to follow that tack. I just wonder if that whole thing will, it's not going to be a be-all and end-all, but just that just gets the kick in the can thing down the road and the captain thing. I just wonder if that sends everything on a course that's not in a good direction.
Yeah, I'd actually do total reverse course, and hopefully even of a new voice like Pierre Maguire, that would even be more reason why I'd make him captain, JR, because I do believe, hey, if I can't find ground right now, it's still 3 years, and I have another year after that. I think if he takes a captain and ownership of the team, which he already has, that there's even more of a buy-in, and I think it's his success and the team's success in the next 3 to 4 years. Well, if you don't have your ship in order, I think you're in trouble anyway. I do think you have a better chance that this is his team. He's the face of the organization, so I'd actually double down and totally reverse what, and again, when Eugene Melnyk was on Toronto Radio and said that, went into a bit of a reference to the 60s Toronto Maple Leafs, and I think John Shannon and Bob McGowan were pretty quick to just say, hey, you know, the leader...
Captain's overrated?
Well, yeah, and a leader's a leader, so no, I would actually hope you'd reverse course, and that's even more reason why I would personally make him captain.
Matthew Tkachuk, of course, is the guy who got everything going on the weekend with his comments on the 32 Thoughts podcast regarding his brother's contract negotiation. So again, we haven't heard from the agent, we haven't heard from the brother, from Brady, but we had have heard from Matthew saying that this is not unfamiliar territory.
Brady might be pulling a classic Tkachuk right now. I mean, Dad held out, Matthew held out, and Brady looks like he's on his way right now. So hopefully it gets, hopefully we can get figured out here. But a lot of fake stuff out there regarding this. They're not too close, so hopefully it gets figured out, but who knows.
All right. So again, thanks to 32 Thoughts Podcast for the audio on from Matthew Tkachuk that really, and I think it came out, I want to say, on late Friday night and Saturday. People were really starting to buzz about it and wondering. And again, you and I differ a little bit on this. I do think this was done at, I don't know, at Brady's behest, maybe more so at Keith, maybe Matthew said to the agent, Craig Oster, who's their uncle, said, you know what, I'm going to stir the pot here a little bit and see if this doesn't get things going. We are, you know, 48 hours away. We don't know what's happening behind the scenes. Pierre McGuire was on our prospects game broadcast. Can we actually play Pierre's comments if you got that ready to go, Hammer? Pierre McGuire talking about the status of this negotiation with Brady Tkachuk.
Since I've been here, we've had 5 meetings, either via phone or face-to-face with Newport Sports Management. Not one of them has ended in an acrimonious manner. Not one of them, I can tell you. We're trying to negotiate. We're in a firm position. They're in a firm position. We'll see where it goes. We're going to have another discussion with them before this week starts, this coming week starts. And hopefully we can make some headway. They want to probably make some headway, and we want to make some headway.
All right. So I don't know if that from Pierre, that's a little bit of an olive branch. Because he said in that clip, he says, I'm going to parse his words here. We've got our spot. You know, we've drawn our line in the sand. The Tkachuk camp has their line in the sand. And then he says toward the end, it sounds like maybe this will be the impetus to somebody cracking them. But somebody's got to crack the door first.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to say, I'm willing to move off my hard line stance.
Yeah.
If you're willing to move off your. But who's going to be the big man to initialize that first?
Yeah.
I guess that's the question.
No,
that's there right now.
No, it's a great point, JR, unless you know the dynamic of it. And back to Matthew Tkachuk's comments, I guess he could, but I don't feel in this particular case. But if you felt like this is going to help in your case, I would argue that I don't think Eugene Melnyk is the type that in hearing those comments would decide, oh, let's go get him signed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it actually could be the reverse. Now, as far as getting together and having dialogue, well, Newport Sports, you always have a great talk. They might even pick up dinner. Most times you're picking up dinner and they'll smile and they're professionals. They're doing a good job. There's no reason to fight, but that doesn't mean you're going to get a deal. And in this case, you are working for a heavily involved father, somewhat a brother, in that anything you say, they go back to the father, and the father may have already said, and they may have already decided, well, this is our number and we're not changing. So you can have all the meetings and all the dialogue and they can smile if you all they want. It's not going to matter, Jer. It's really a question of, can you somehow massage it a little bit? But without knowing the numbers and the dynamics of it, we'll see. Now, when you get to the pressure points of the start of the season, I'm going to say, if I'm the Tkachuk camp, and I'm going to be firm. I'm not changing anything, and I want a long-term deal. I'm not going to do a bridge deal. All I do is sit, because I don't see any circumstance where this is going to get better for the Ottawa Senators. In my history of contract negotiations and being involved watching David Poile, we never got a player for cheaper, Jer. We never.
Price never came down.
I repeat, never. We never, ever got a player for any cheaper. And if the Ottawa Senators were to start the season.
Did the years ever change? Like, you know, they wanted a short term and you got them on a long term. You know what I mean?
But the contracts back then, there was no such thing as 8 years, right? Like 4 years was a long time. But all I know is that David worked like it was his own money. And he used to say to him, man, it's not your money. I know we have a budget. But it always, in the end, appeared that somebody held out and we ended up paying more than if you got it done. And in this case, if they are really that adamant, and when you look at this hockey team right now, I'm not saying the sky is going to fall without Brady Tkachuk, but should the season start and they start to struggle, well, then again, I think I think most of the leverage is with the player right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see that going down anytime soon.
No. And I know we've all kind of circled the opening day of training camp as being maybe an artificial pressure point, but I think at most that's what it is. It's artificial. It's to me, it's not the pressure. The pressure point is the opening day of the season. If he's not in the lineup in the opening day of the season, and as you said, if things go in the wrong direction, I already think they hold the majority of the cards in this negotiation. That would only increase it. And as you said, the numbers usually don't go down. And we're talking about a family that's got a history of being willing to do this. And so no reason to think Brady's going to be any different.
Yeah, and then the other part that we don't know, and again, has not really been discussed, JR, this may also be that, hey, both sides, and this is the nice part, want a long-term deal. It may already been decided that, hey, let's all set a deadline of maybe it's not Wednesday, maybe it's not even the following Wednesday, but let's say at least for the 1st of October, so we've got 2 weeks to work with before opening night, if we have worked and nobody's going to budge, nothing's going to happen. I can't work with Eugene Melnyk, and meaning, because part of this is also his management. You go back to your owner and say, hey, you know what? I think if we give a little bit and they give a little bit, and then Oster would do the same thing with his brother-in-law. But in that case, he'd say, listen, by October 1st, we can't get her done. Let's just do a bridge deal. That may be, and I don't think it's ever been discussed, that, hey, they might have already set a date. Let's work hard. Let's negotiate. And if we can't do it, let's just get a deal done so we can start the season with you.
Unsigned writes, how come Mitch Marner's dad was torched for being involved in a contract negotiation and Keith Tkachuk is a hero and an awesome family, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, Keith's tougher and probably more intimidating. I don't really see it as that way. First of all, this has not come from Keith Tkachuk whatsoever. Marner's dad was feeding everybody to the point that he got embarrassed. And what I also understand there's so much jealousy from the Marner family towards Austin Matthews. Nothing to do with the kid, JR. That was such a big part of fueling this whole thing that's why I think it's a different one. Keith Tkachuk's just basically sat back. Now, this is the first time we've had the kid chime in, and certainly Gord Miller has, and I have, but my information is not from the Tkachuk people. So I just think this is Keith Tkachuk, to be kind of honest with you, is just basically doing it in the background. I don't think he's filtering it. And I just don't believe in the case he kind of prepped Matthew before he went in. You hop on these podcasts, and I just think Matthew Tkachuk just talked like he talks probably any other time. Just this time, it's being recorded.
He is a shift disturber on the ice, off the ice, and apparently in the podcast world as well. Let's see here. Good morning, gents. People keep saying that there are no comparables to Brady. Isn't Wayne Simmonds in his prime a cookie-cutter profile to Brady Tkachuk?
You know what? I don't think Wayne was as good, but that's a strong comparison. Sample size of where he got to, though, in a very Brady, first of all, at that age, is a much better player. So no, I'm not going to quite go to that. But
Wayne Simmonds was pretty. Unfortunately, when he fell off, he fell off quickly.
No, but he had a 30 goal year. It's a great point. I just intangibles as far as presence on the ice and everything that Brady has brought at a very early age, JR. To me, it's elevated much closer to the presence that his father had on the ice than necessarily a Wayne Simmonds.
Okay, of course the Sens would love to have Brady sign, but I understand if they dig in and don't offer more than they'd like and make their lives difficult negotiating with other players going forward. They should stick to the plan and stick to their cap. In my opinion, he's not worth more than Chabot. Imagine if they'd actually signed Carlson to the long-term deal. P.S. Maybe Colin White can give a bit of his salary to make up any difference. That comes from inside.
No, and this says, I can understand where people say you're trying to look at budgets, JR. You're trying to look at contracts, how Stutzel will be involved. No two negotiations are the same. The problem with the Toronto Maple Leafs is by the time they caved on Austin Matthews and giving money and bad term, they really had no choice in the case of Marner, but they could have went further on Marner. It's a fine line. You're trying to do what's right as a team. You're trying to have an internal budget, but also not understanding the dynamics. But the idea that Brady Tkachuk gets a bit more, how this will affect a guy like Stutzla, I don't see it being that big of a deal. Like, Stutzla's going to come in and say, hey, league-wide, I think I'm a star. I don't care what these other guys are making. If the market at that point is $9 million, JR, then he's going to get $9 million.
Zane the window cleaner. Matthew's comments on the weekend makes the Tkachuk sound like a bunch of arrogant tools. That's from Zane.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it, Zane. I didn't like this cutthroat part of it. You know, I understand business is business, but I don't really feel like that. I don't think that comment's a good look. I thought it was real bush league, to be honest with you.
Chris writes, the longer these unsigned contract negotiations go on with star players, at what point, if any at all, does management get concerned over fan base feelings? For me, when these types of negotiations drag on, I always seem to start getting annoyed with the player more than the club, probably because any of us would give our left you-know-what they say to play. Does management ever consider or get concerned they may be igniting negative feelings from fans towards star players the longer negotiations drag on? From Chris.
Well, they've tried very hard, JR, I think, for the most part, to keep this private, and that's part of it. Part of it is for the organization, but hey, there are times where maybe you want to protect the player. It is slowly leaked out, as you would expect, that there's information. There's certainly a lot of misinformation, but in the case of the Ottawa Senators, the simple part of it is that they're just in a unique spot where they are still in very much a proving zone. And that's a tough spot, JR, because as Goody pointed out on the weekend, I didn't realize based on the new HVAC system and some of the things, there are some thoughts or expectations they may be into full capacity come the regular season. Well, how this is going to affect your bottom line as an organization, only they can answer. But this is the case here where that is a bit of the leverage for the player. It's not all of a sudden Brady signs and you sell out all the thing. But, you know, there's still a lot of people that are very much in a wait-and-see mode with their pocketbooks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Kachuk camp knows that. And the other part I would say just on Chris's point on that is that I think things, short of this dragging into half a season, which I don't believe for a second it's going to, people forget very quickly. You know, Brady Kachuk could, you know, be, you know, could be unsigned halfway through training camp. He signs, it's maybe a big deal, you know, and he signs, and let's say it's a contract that people think is excessive. But the Sens have said, you know what, we got to get him in. We're going to pay him more than we want to, but we got him in. And some people would grumble, oh, it's way too much. You know what? They would care for a day. And then it's forgotten.
Yeah.
So I think we're all making a really big deal about this now. And, you know, some people have already gone to, ah, man, I got no time for that dude. Trade him. Get him out of here. Honestly, folks, training camp hasn't even begun yet. There are five or six other really good players that are in the exact same situation. He could be signed right now for all we know, or in an hour, or in a day from, or 20, or 48 hours from now, and be here at camp and be on the ice for the first day. So I think the outrage that I'm, and it's a small pocket, the outrage I'm seeing from some people on, especially who are, and I agree with Chris's point. The longer these things go on, the more it seems like the players get the flack and not the owners. I still think there's tons of times here and a time, and I think it goes away very quickly if and when he signs.
It very much does. And again, part of a negotiation, and it's back and forth, Jer, but also in the case of the Kachucks, and this is the real key, you have to be ready. And especially if you feel like you're being overpaid, you have to step on the ice and perform. And this is also much different than the Yashin type situations when you already have a contract and you're holding out. I don't think for a second there is one person that sides with the player, right? I mean, it just makes you feel sick to your stomach that you're doing that. This is a negotiation. It's happening, and this is the real key, and this is one of the problems that Marner ran into, is that realistically, not that he hasn't performed in the regular season, but when you want to maximize on dollars and you want to be overpaid, then there's no more excuses, right? Hey, I want to see what you do. He was a no-show in the playoffs. For Brady Kachuk, if you want to grind it, you just have to be prepared that when you come in, and this is Carey Price, anybody else, JR, all I now, you're being paid. It's like White when he got his contract. Okay, that's fine. But now come in and be a $5 million hockey player. There's no more room for you're on entry level or you're working your way up. You're now being paid just like Thomas Chabot. I expect Thomas Chabot this year to be an $8 million defenseman.
So I think it was Thursday or Friday, I was saying the restricted, and you just go to Cap Friendly, and they've got it right at the top of their page. You can go to who are the unsigned guys. They've got a restricted free agent page. You click on it, and for the most part last week, it was 15 guys. That's now been whittled down after Friday and the weekend. It's down to 9 now, 6 more guys. Nolan Patrick signed last night with Vegas, and he's not a comparable right now to Brady Kachuk. He's got a much smaller resume. He's got injuries. He's been traded, all that other stuff. So, but the list is being whittled down. The issue, though, is that there's 5 or 6 names at the top of the list. Those guys have been at the top of the list the entire time. Other than Svechnikov, most of the guys that have signed have by and large been, we'll say, a tier below, right? Kyler Yamamoto, Nolan Patrick, et cetera, et cetera. You've still got Kaprizov, Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, Rasmus Dahlin, Brady Kachuk, Robbie Thomas, maybe a slight step below the guy, you know, in St. Louis who lives with the Kachucks, you know, so 5 or 6 guys that have been at the top of the list, at the top of the RFA list the entire time. They're all in the same boat right now.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting to see if and when one of them signs, whether that starts a domino of, and it's not necessarily based on contracts and comparables, because some of them are defensemen, some of them are score, you know what I mean? Like they're different players. But I wonder if it's kind of like if that's going to be what really gets the ball rolling at some point.
No, and it's a great point, Jared, and that's generally when it comes to trends and tendencies and when we first started getting these big contracts out of entry level. But I got to be quite honest with you, that ship has sailed. And at the same time, when Svechnikov ended up signing, I guess Pettersson to some extent, but I don't know by the time Quinn Hughes, Kaprizov as well being a bit older, I'm not so sure that it'll have any effect in this particular case, because I do think at the end of the day, there's enough of a market, enough of a precedent overall that now I think this is just quite simply philosophical between the Sens and Tkachuk. So now timing-wise, as we get towards camp, is there all pressures on each market and each player? Well, that's a little bit different, but I don't see one particular signing at this point is necessarily going to change anything here in Ottawa. I really feel like this is an isolated negotiation where, as I said, philosophically, you just have two sides as of right now that are on a different page.
James in Orleans writes, hey, boys, can Brady still be offer-sheeted or is that window closed? Nope, he can be. Yeah, he's an unsigned player right now.
Yeah, and the term to that, offer sheeted is as much, do you want to be offer sheeted?
Yeah, you have to sign it.
Are you going out if you're Newport Sports? And again, tried to explain, JR, before in the industry, not that teams won't approach Newport Sports, but usually negotiations, and real early on this, but Ryan O'Reilly back in the day with Calgary, he sits, he's holding out, he's playing in Russia. Now what the team or the team of agents will do, well, now they start to go canvas general managers. And what you're really trying to do is sell. Hey, here's why I think this would be right. And then the manager will say, well, I really don't think I want to do it. And at the end of the day, they're just going to match anyway. So it's up to the agent to kind of say, no, here's why it's going to work. And here's what we want to do. But what's also strange right now, JR, in an offer sheet, all the players want their money backloaded. The real trick to an offer sheet is the mega signing bonus. Does Brady Tkachuk want to take a $20 million signing bonus right now with escrow?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So it's I don't know. I don't know if the angles. And I've also said, realistically, and it's crazy money. If somebody's going to offer sheet Brady Tkachuk, in my estimation, they're going to give him 7 years, and they're going to give him over $10.3 million. Because I don't really understand why you'd waste your time going less. And unless the team looks at four first round picks, I don't know you're going to walk away. Would you agree?
Nobody's going that high for Brady Tkachuk.
If you're doing an offer sheet, is my point. It has to be stupidity. And that's the only thing that I could see stupid. And if not, then you're getting very close to an Aho situation where there's not good enough compensation. And at the same time, the team can't afford to walk away from the player.
I know that, that teams can, move some players around potentially. But if we look at just the teams that would have the cap space to, let's say somebody, crazily offered Brady Tkachuk an average annual value contract of $10 million. So I'm looking at right now on Cap Friendly, and I believe there are 11 teams right now that have anywhere from $8 million to, $8 million or more in cap space right now. So we can eliminate some teams immediately who would have no interest in giving up four first-round draft picks, right? Seattle Kraken are an expansion team. They got no, right? You would agree? Seattle Kraken, no chance.
No.
Okay, New York Rangers, we'll put them aside. Columbus Blue Jackets.
No.
Vancouver Canucks, they got their own issues to deal with.
Yeah,
Nashville Predators.
No.
Arizona Coyotes.
God, no. First of all, if you're Ottawa, and this is the other part, because it's so fun, Jaron. I'm only talking philosophically. People are like, oh, my God, get that offer sheet and let's get the four first-round picks. Well, okay, now you're going right into another rebuild if you're Ottawa in a sense of, depending on the team, if it's bottom third first-round picks, that guy's not playing for you for another 4 years. And then also from the Tkachuk side, I don't get the sense they're totally chasing the dough. They've got to look at a situation where they actually think is a good spot to go to as well.
Yeah.
Hey?
So here's
my point, finding a dance partner that makes sense on every level is really difficult.
Yeah. Anaheim's another team. I think they're in a total rebuild. Detroit, I would agree as well. Buffalo, no. I mean, they're going right down to the bottom. Here's one team, and if we're just spitballing out here and having fun, pick a team. They got $12 million in cap space right now. They got a couple of really good young centers, and they got a $9 million player coming off their books next to summer. What about the New Jersey Devils?
Well, that had been floated out on the weekend. It was a bit of a joke.
Oh, was it really?
No.
Honestly,
no,
did not read that.
No. It was a joke account that said it was a 4-year thing. Had looked like the New Jersey Devils. The tie, of course, is Fitzy, not his uncle, or Fitzgerald, right, is related to the Tkachuks.
Yes.
I guess they got their picks.
He's
tight with the Hughes. Now, unfortunately, he's tight with the Hughes that doesn't play there, but maybe they all go to New Jersey. Jimmy just loads up the cup, the dad, and drives them all in for Michigan. Three Hughes boys and Chucky.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe Quinn Hughes would be the more the better offer sheet for New Jersey. Yeah, but if I'm spitballing here and I'm looking at who would seem like of all the teams that have picks and have cap space and have a pretty it looks like a pretty decent team that's starting to ascend.
Yeah.
And again, as I said, PK Subban comes off the books next year. So they would presumably have that. Now they got to sign Jack. You know, Jack Hughes, I think, needs a contract next year. A lot of people think Jack Hughes is going to have a monster year this year.
Yeah, and I don't want to stir the pot at 10 a.m. because sometimes that leaks into the next show. The only offer sheet I've ever been told by a very reliable source is St. Louis, and that was if they had moved Tarasenko's contract.
Okay.
That's the only one that's ever been legitimately discussed.
Do you think the St. Louis Blues would go to the level of four first-round picks? Well, I'm talking about a general manager who doesn't even want to give signing bonuses.
Yeah, no, I know. But it's also funny is that I know that they're really, really second-guessing the whole Petrangelo thing. And what is also funny is that they're represented by Newport Sports. But that's the beauty. You can fight with one of them one day, and then you get to talk to them the next day. I find it very unlikely, JR, but again...
St. Louis does not have their own second-round pick, so it would have to be at a level where it's got to be the four first-rounders.
Yeah, and I find it very far-fetched as well, and don't feel like
I don't feel like any of this is an issue, but it's... Listen, we've discussed every angle of this story. Why not bring that one back for a while?
And then give Lloydie an opportunity to free...
Maybe train off the end of that one.
Huh? Phone lines are open, Kenny. Kenny ain't happy.
All right. That'll wrap it up for us.